This is Thoughts on the Table by DisgracesOnTheMenu.com.
Hello and welcome back to Thoughts on the Table, the audio blog on food and food culture with Paolo and Nick Zingale back again with me. Hi Nick, good morning.
Ciao Paolo.
It's good to see you.
Good to see you too.
So Nick got in touch with me right after we had our first episode saying, I got another idea. We need to talk about Italian stereotypes and whether they're true or not. So I thought that's fantastic. That's a brilliant idea. So we're just going to get started. What do you think?
Let's just jump right into it.
Why not? All right. So when we talk about Italians, a few things come to mind, like that we are said not to be very efficient, or like that in Italy, say the trains don't run on time, that everything gets lost in the mail, and that the bureaucracy is super slow, complicated, and crazy. So let's talk about that for a second. First off, is it true or is it false? Nick?
Not true. I don't think it's anywhere near what Italians have built it up to be. You know, when I first got there, I did this like exchange program. So there was an orientation, and I have this book they gave me almost targeted towards like a business traveler. And they're like these cultural, almost cautionary books. Like if you go to this country, here's what you need to know. And here's what you need to know about Italy.
Yes, of course. Yeah, I'm familiar with that. Yeah.
And then, yeah, you probably had something like that when you moved to Canada. And
no, actually.
No.
No, I didn't even bother. I knew it was obviously much more evolved than where I was coming from. So I didn't bother with that. But I did check those books before going to Morocco.
Okay, exactly.
Makes sense.
So, yes. Yeah, you know, and they kind of gave us these presentations. And I remember they showed us this video on YouTube. And it was like, oh, this is the difference between Italy and the rest of Europe. And it was almost like to the point of being derogatory that I was kind of surprised they showed it to us. But it was basically like, oh, the rest of Europe, if you want to catch the bus, you stand at the bus stop and look at the time and the bus comes and then you get on the bus. But in Italy, you stand at the bus stop and you're here and then the bus goes here. So you run to catch that bus and then that bus drives away and then another bus pulls up behind you and you turn around and run to catch that bus and then that bus drives away. And when you have bureaucracy, you go to one window and they send you to the next window and then that window sends you back to the first window.
Yeah.
And this is the difference between Italy and the rest of Europe. And, you know, you see that stuff and it definitely has an impression on you and it definitely feeds into probably pre-existing stereotypes.
Mm-hmm. But what did you find when you were there, really?
I found that Italians love to talk about how bad their bureaucracy is. It's probably equivalent to talking about the weather in like England. They all say they love to talk. That's just their, you know,
go-to conversation.
Small talk.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that it's just so blown out of proportion. You know, I did have my experience when I first got there. I had to get a train pass. And I did have that experience. We went to the window to get the pass and the printer was broken. So the guy said, oh, you got to go to, you know, you got to go to the office in the city. So we go to the office and then this guy at the other one says, well, no, you got to have codice fiscale. And, you know, they send you back and forth. And I did have that experience. But at the same time, I had an almost identical experience in the United States. I had left my job and I was trying to get my health insurance situated over the phone from Italy. And I was having an almost identical experience simultaneously in the U.S. being sent between different government agencies. So it's not so much that it doesn't exist in Italy, but that they think that they're so unique in it. So yeah, I don't think it's really anything different than the baseline inefficiencies. And before we move on, I do want to mention the trains because I traveled so much. And I traveled in other countries as well. And I would have to say that the Italian, you know, Trenitalia is really good. And I never had any big kind of delays. You know, their high-speed trains are really fancy, really nice. The Frecce.
The Frecce.
Everything runs on time. It's easy to buy the tickets. So, yeah, I think it's really good.
Okay, that's good. That's good. Nice. let's move on to the next topic, which is, I'm going to go slower here because we're talking about lifestyle. So there are some things about Italian lifestyle. They're very stereotypical. Like everybody drinks wine. What do you say? True or false?
I mean, I would think that for the most part, true. I mean, I think it's, you know, part of a culture to drink wine with food. I'm sure there's obviously people who don't like it, but you know, I don't know, I guess, is that stereotype supposed to be negative as far as like, oh, well, they drink too much wine? I mean, I don't know that I've necessarily had heard that one subscribe to Italy.
No, I think it's like everybody enjoys themselves when they are dining and they dine with wine, which is mostly true. I have to say, like, my dad would not hesitate to open two or three bottles of wine during a dinner because you need to pair this with that and then that with this, and then you need a dessert wine at the end. Even if he's just dining on his own, he wouldn't hesitate. Wine is also very inexpensive there. You can buy wine at the supermarket, and it, you know, with a couple of euros, you can bring home a very good bottle of wine. That's the culture, but people drink other drinks too, and that's something that is very little known, I find. Like, there's a big beer culture in Italy that's not very well known at all, especially in the north.
Artigianale.
Yes.
That's the microbrew.
Beer artigianale, microbreweries. Yes, there's a lot of interesting microbreweries in the north of Italy, and Italians are very fond of beer, yeah.
Yeah, you know, if I can digress for just a second.
Of course.
Back to just talking about food, of course, your bread and butter. One thing that I never noticed, or I never knew until I got corrected on it, was you drink beer with pizza. You don't drink wine with pizza.
Well, some people do drink wine
with pizza. I got called out on that one.
I think it's just the pizza is considered very informal. it's not junk food to an Italian, but it's certainly an informal meal. Therefore, you know, and it kind of pairs flavor-wise very well with beer. But you can actually have pizza with wine, and I have to say I've tried it, and it's awesome.
Yeah.
Red wine.
I will rate that one mostly true.
Mostly true, anyway. Yeah. Anyway, let's move on to the next one then. Everybody can cook. True or false?
I will also rate that one as mostly true. And you know, it just goes back to, and we kind of talked about it in the first episode we did, but just that food and drink is just so much more valued in Italy than it is in other cultures. So, you know, I live with a family with a couple of teenage boys, and they definitely knew their way around the kitchen way more than I or any of the people that I grew up with knew their way around the kitchen at that age. Now, I mean, were they master chefs? No, but, you know, they had a better grasp on the basics than I think youth in probably a lot of places do.
Yeah, I think it's because they grew up observing their mothers, their fathers as well, cooking. So they have some idea on how to, you know, do some basic things well, correctly. And I don't know, I think lately Italians have also become even more food snobs with the with, you know, Instagram and the food blogs and the TV shows on food. I think, you know, it's tapping into that curiosity and skill and palate that they have. And therefore, everybody has, you know, a way now, a channel to advertise the way they scramble their eggs. And everybody can, you know, talk for hours about that, and they enjoy doing that. So that's what I find when I go there now. I used to be the one to bring up food. Now it's everybody else who talks about food all the time.
So. Okay, so maybe I even went to Italy at a time where it was even more popular than it even has been in recent decades.
Then. I think so. It could be. I mean, Italians have always been very attentive to what they eat. But I think right now they're talking about technique. They're talking about, you know, the proper knife to use on something. So they're becoming very, very technical for some reason. So that's cool. Anyway, I agree with you. I would give it a true. This is a true.
And, you know, not even to get too much into gender roles, but I think that in general, the men can cook way better and know way more about food than they do here. So.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Not better than women, but generally, absolutely.
They know their way around. They'll cook a meal, you know?
Yeah, that's very true. That's very true. And then sticking to food again, food and drinks, everyone drinks espresso.
Mostly true.
I agree.
Just like everyone drinks homeopathic coffee here in North America.
That stuck with you. Well, I'd say yes, everybody drinks espresso in a bar, in a coffee bar. Not true if you talk about the homes. A lot of people now, you know, have espresso machine at home as well. But traditionally, people use other means to brew their coffee at home, like the mocha, which is some kind of a percolator.
Got one here now, yeah.
Now you have your Bialetti.
I've been thinking about upgrading to an espresso machine, though, because it doesn't have that, like...
Crema.
It's not as creamy.
Yeah,
I guess like when you drink the espresso and you have this residue on the sides of the cup, like it's just a different consistency. It's a different thing.
Italians love that.
Yeah.
But anyway, I have to say yes. Everybody drinks espresso, and they seem to drink it at every hour of the day as well. Most of them do.
Yeah, the first time when I started to realize that it's normal to have espresso at 10 o'clock at night after dinner.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, I won't sleep if I have that. Some people told me, no, that's all in the mind. You can have it. That doesn't actually affect you.
Well, it's not true. But it's true that you can train yourself, so it doesn't matter to you. But I think most people can train themselves if they start drinking at a young age. Not that I recommend it. But anyway, Nick, if you agree, we can move on to the next one, which is... everybody knows how to drive fast.
I personally did have some experiences with some Italians that had the lead foot, no doubt about it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I know some people here that do too.
Of course.
So I'm going to rate that one that I saw some evidence that kind of led to that, but I don't have experience with it to give a strong rating one way or the other, especially when you consider relative to other countries where people also drive fast.
Absolutely. So I would say everyone, not true. Of course, the way they're stated, none of it is really true. But anyway, I'd have to say, yes, it's true that everybody can drive, mostly because they have to, in the sense that if you're living in a big city, because of the way the cities are built from Roman ruins, they grew organically out from a center. So technically, there's no square angles in an Italian city. So streets tend to be very convoluted, complicated, with a lot of circular stuff. And there's a lot of cars. So there's a lot of people. So you kind of have to be aware of what you're doing when you get on the street. So my experience is from driving in Milan. I lived in Milan for a couple of years. And yeah, I have to say, it's a miracle that no accident seemed to happen. But people move in and out really, really fast from lanes. And they seem to know what to do in big roundabouts. And everything seems to flow very, very well. Surprising.
Do you drive automatics in Vancouver?
Yes, I do, because I share a car with my wife.
But
that's the only reason. I would prefer standard for sure.
I think that when you drive, and I never drove a standard here. I don't really know how to do it. You know, if I ever owned one, I'm sure I could pick up on it relatively quickly. But I think that, you know, if you're driving a standard, you probably have to pay more attention. And, you know, you have less of this going on, right? And all the other distractions. So I think there's definitely something to be said for it.
Yeah, I think you're right that automatic may lead to, you know, driving a little bit like the kind of drives itself.
Mm-hmm.
However, I don't completely agree, because standard will become very, very natural, and then you can forget you're driving there as well. So I think it's mostly because everybody tends to move very quickly from A to B, tends to create a system that requires you a certain level of awareness. And I think espresso helps to do that. So overall, also, you know, especially in big cities, business is the main focus of everyone as they get into their cars in the morning. So, you know, getting to work on time is important. So everybody will try to do that. And somehow the system seems to work to the point that there are no accidents.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, branching off of that one, we could talk about crossing the street, which we don't have on our list, but
it's true.
And I think you mentioned you've never been to Naples.
I know. I'm afraid.
Yeah, that is a whole nother thing. I don't even remember if I saw any traffic lights or if they just basically agree that they don't need them. People just weave in and out. Mm-hmm. Drivers stop for pedestrians. And it's really amazing to me how, with a little bit of confidence, how well it works.
Yeah.
People share the road, you know, they, and not just in Naples, but that's the most extreme example. They, you know, here we have the sidewalk and the two wide lanes for the cars and mm-hmm. the bike lane. And in many parts in Italy, people just share the road. And whether you're a pedestrian, you have a Vespa, you have a car, what mm-hmm. bicycle, like people respect each other and they get out of the way for each other and they, you know, they let each other in and it works.
That's kind of true. I have to agree. I think also everybody sort of expects everyone to behave in a certain predictable way. So you kind of know what everybody's doing and you accommodate them. I think the only time where the system breaks down is when people do something unexpected or sudden.
That's when people get mad.
Yeah, exactly. That's when they start honking and they even get off their cars. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. in general, I agree with you. It's a very well-organized system where everything seems to flow. And people, yeah, share the road. I totally agree. I heard that in Naples, there's not really a red light. There's different shades of red. There are red lights that are really red and other red lights that are sort of a suggestion.
Yeah, a guy from Turin was talking to me about Naples before I had gone on there, and he said he was at a red light, and the police were telling him, go. What are you doing?
Yeah, that's when you do something that is not predictable, unexpected to them, and you can cause an accident if you don't go. Or if you slow down when it turns yellow, that can be something that also throws people off, and you may get into an accident if you do that. They'll honk you if you do that. All right, let's move on because it's getting a little bit into dangerous territory here. Okay, so continuing on lifestyle, let's talk about the fact that everyone seems to know how to dress up. True or false?
You know, it's more true than here. You know, I think you're less likely to see people dress down than you are here in North America. But I think that one was something that was so built up for me beforehand mm-hmm. that I was underwhelmed by it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, bella figura, everyone is trying to present this appearance every time they leave the house, you know. And then when you go to the supermarket and you do see someone wearing sneakers, mm-hmm. it kind of goes against this sort of preconceived thing where you were told, no, everyone's dressing up all the time. So, and I'm sure that's something that's probably changed in recent decades as well.
It has. I think, Nick, to see that, you need to go to the Duomo in Milan, to Piazza Duomo. At any time of the day, it's like a fashion show. A lot of people go there just to be seen, and they will pay a mm-hmm. lot of attention to that. Another place where it's kind of, you know, a paradox, but you'll see that a lot is going in and out of church. People will dress up to go to church just because, you know, they want people to see them at their best, which is a sign of, you know, care of themselves, wealth as well. And, you know, people pay attention to that. They don't want people to think that they're not doing well or they're having some problems. So mm-hmm. I think this is where you can see it. But yeah, I agree with you. To go to the supermarket, you'll see a lot of sneakers. Though you won't see any sweatpants, I don't think.
Yeah, so, I didn't wear sweatpants.
Thanks for that.
It's kind of that thing where, like, when you get back to the home country after being abroad, mm-hmm. like, I was still kind of, like, always putting my jeans on. And then as the months went by, oh, okay, I'll wear the sneakers this time. And then you kind of fall back into and that's how it works.
Yeah, it's true. All right, so I think we're done on lifestyle for now. We may come back on it later. But I wanted now to move on to the concept of time. Time is not a universal thing. Einstein was right. anyway, time is perceived differently in Italy than in the rest of the world, I think. This is what the stereotype at least says. The first one that comes to mind is that in Italy, women wake up at 5 in the morning to make fresh pasta. True or false?
False.
Absolutely false.
I never ran across that one.
It's false. They wake up at 4:30 sometimes to make baths. That's what the reality is. No, they don't do that anymore. Maybe they used to, but now, you know, you can buy fresh baths at the supermarket, which is delicious. Or you can make it, you know, the night before and get a little bit creative because you have a fridge and stuff like that. So I agree, that's totally a false stereotype. But it's true, I think, that people live with their parents until they're 30 years old.
Yes.
You agree.
Yes, that one is true. You know, I taught in a high school and talked with a lot of high school students, and what they're going to do, the graduating ones, they go off to university, and most of them live with their parents and commute into the city for university. And, you know, it's not so bad, I guess, if everyone's doing it. you know, it's an expensive place. It's hard to find work for the youth. And
it's true.
There's probably some cultural things also that kind of exacerbate those economic factors. But yeah, that's definitely true.
Yeah, I mean, it was true for me. I think for me it was like Italians are very close to their families, for one thing. So they're close to their parents, their mothers especially. And they sort of use family as support growing up. And this lasts into their university years. People don't have student loans generally. Families take care of that cost. And also the fact that it lasts so long is because of the way the studies work, I think, is still somewhat true. It was, I think, more true when I was there. Like, high school ends when you're about 19, which is a little bit later than the United States. And then university usually lasts 5 years. And then you have a master thesis to prepare for the type of studies that most people were doing during my times. And now there's shorter, more like bachelor degrees. They didn't exist back then. So because of this, you know, if you're lucky, it will take you 6 years to finish, which makes you about 25. But then a lot of people would actually take a lot longer to get their degree because it's hard because you have to pass a bunch of tests, and each test is usually a written and then an oral part. And then if you don't pass the test, if you don't get a sufficient score or a score that is satisfactory to you, you have to, you can refuse it, and then you have to give it again. This will, you know, delay. Sometimes you have to wait months before you can attempt it again. So in my case, it took a lot longer. In my case, also, I had the mandatory military service, or the mandatory, you know, civilian service, which I did as a replacement, which also took about a year. But overall, yes, it adds up to taking a long time to get out of there. But anyway, you can do that on your own. Probably you can do that living away from your family, but Italians prefer to do it with their families when they can. So that's the truth, I think. Anyway, true. Okay, let's move on to more concept of time topics. The fact that people are late everywhere.
Mostly false. That's another one that I was warned about a lot. And I just didn't really have any experiences, you know. The buses aren't going to show up on the at the time on the schedule, and you know, I was at a school. I thought everyone said everything's late, so you know the classes aren't going to start on time, and everything's going to be late all the time. And I just
I think
pretty much some people are late, you know, but
yeah, some people are late everywhere. So
yeah,
not true.
I don't know your take on that one.
Oh, no, I agree. I think people fought that attitude because it hurts everybody. Like, if you're always waiting for somebody to show up, you know, a lot of people are wasting time. So you cannot really sustain that. So I think people have found ways to counter that. Like in school, there's a big, loud bell that they're like in every school, I think. So the class will start at that time. In universities, there's no bell. And classes start 15 minutes late. So it's sort of a built-in interval between classes, which is necessary for people to transfer from one classroom to another, get organized. It's usually added at the beginning of the regular starting time. So everything starts 15 minutes late. It's called quarto d'ora accademico.
The
academic 15 minutes. So it's not being late. In fact, it's a new time that you have to respect. So it's just a delay.
Yeah, see, we kind of have, they build passing time into the schedule. So like the classes will be 8 to 8.50 and then 9 to 9.50 and they build that.
It's more regulated. It's more official. Yeah. Anyway, I don't think people are late all the time. What about meal times? I think the stereotype is that Italians will dine really, really, really late.
Mostly true.
Mostly true.
Mostly true. I think a lot of people don't really even know that one, though, but definitely true. I think when I got there, I was pretty surprised, you know, and I had read a lot about Italy, but I somehow never came across that one. You know, dinner's going to be at 8, 9 o'clock at night. Mm-hmm. And it just took me a couple days to realize, oh, wait, this is how they do it. So,
yeah, I think it comes from, you know, more of a tradition where, you know,
farmers.
Yeah, the day's hot and then, you know, it gets cool and that's the best time to dine. It's more true, in fact, in the south than it is in the north, where it's not as warm, of course. But yeah, it's true that people like to consider dinner some kind of evening entertainment as well. So restaurants will open at 7:30 in the north, typically. But they don't get busy until 8:30 or 9. People like to have an aperitivo, a drink before going to dinner. And in fact, if you're in a, if you're a tourist in an Italian city, at 7:15, you may not even find any restaurants because they have their lights turned off, they you know, the doors closed, and you can't even find them. But then everything will start to populate, and then if you really want to gauge which restaurants are popular, you have to wait because nobody's going to really be popular until 9 p.m. So that's my advice there. At least, you know, you can go and check them out for the next day. And then you can go there when they open if you want. Anyway, continuing on time, let's say that there's one other aspect that people may think of as a stereotype, that everything shuts down for lunch.
Not in big cities, but in small towns, absolutely.
Yeah, it's true.
The town that I did my little high school teaching in, you know, noon to three every day.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
Everything's closed. It's great.
Now people have to eat, you know, they need to, they cannot continue work through lunch. And sometimes they take advantage of that. I remember there was this paint shop in my hometown that would open at 4:30 in the afternoon after shutting down at 1. And then it will run until 7:30. But, you know, how bad do you need that paint? I mean, can you not wait? I mean, do you need to paint at 3 p.m.?
Yeah.
Can you not wait? So really, there's nothing urgent there. A pharmacy would be open, of course, and a supermarket now, you know, is open extended hours.
You just need to plan for stuff. You know, you can't have everything instantly. Like
yeah,
you
have to wait sometimes.
Yeah.
Yes, so there's something to consider. Again, if you're looking to buy something, especially in a small town, you probably have to, you know, take it easy after lunch. Maybe have a nap. And then you can go on.
Yeah.
Okay. I think we got the concept of time dealt with. What'd you say?
Yes.
All right. Let's move on then to social interactions. So we kind of touched on it already, but the stereotype is that nobody respects lineups. True? False?
True. I don't recall if I told this story last time, but when I first got off the airplane at Milan, Malpensa Airport, and was taking a bus to Turin. And I had my ticket, and I was pretty close to the door when the bus pulled up and somehow ended up being the last person on the bus.
What did you do?
I just stood there, and everyone just kind of like nudged in front of me, and I didn't know how to...
Oh, that's a shame, actually. I always found that really, really annoying as an Italian living in Italy. And I was very, very relieved when coming to Canada, people would honor the lineup at the bus stop. You know, you go there first, you deserve, you know, first pick at a seat on the bus, especially if they're going to run out. So it makes logical sense. But I think Italians would just know that nobody will really honor that rule. So it's like when the door opens, it's free for all. So because of that, if you're the one, you know, paying attention to that, somebody will take advantage of you. So you might as well do the same, which is like...
That's the prisoner's dilemma.
It's true. That's exactly the problem. And it's bad because he perpetuates this attitude which everybody's furbo, everybody's cunning, smarter, thinks to be smarter than you. So, you know, because of that, you need to be smarter than them. But it's very, very, very frustrating. At least it was for me.
See, once I got used to it, I was pretty good at it. I'm pretty able to like nudge my way in there. So yeah. I did pretty well.
Yeah, but it's true. It's true. I have to say. I wrote a post on this. There are situations where there's simply not room for a lineup to form, like a store where there's a counter and there's no numbering system. You just get there. Everybody kind of crowds in front of the counter, like a bakery. And then you basically have to shout out your order when it's your turn. And to do that, it's very stressful because you have to kind of cross the seller's eye when he's looking at you and really start talking, you know, have your order ready and not wait for anything, or somebody else will speak before you and you just missed your turn. So mm-hmm. in those situations, it's really, really tough for somebody who's not used to the system. Some people are used to the system and they will, you know, as they enter the room, they will ask, who's last? You can do that. Ask out loud, who's last? You know, you're going to go after them. And that you have to just monitor one person at that point. You don't know how many people are going to get in between you, but at least it removes the stress of, looking around and starting to talk, possibly taking somebody's turn. It's true that people don't quite know how to do it. So I have to say, I agree. This is still true. All right. One thing that Italians are known for is that they talk with their hands more than with their mouths, or as well as with their mouths. Is that true or false?
True.
Very true.
I think, an interesting way for me to observe that one is speaking Italian with someone on the phone for me is like a language I've never heard in my life, but for some reason I can converse with someone who's in front of me. Mm-hmm. And I think you just pick it up latently. If you're learning Italian, you just do it without even thinking about it. But it's almost like everything you say, you're signaling something, you know, I'm full and I'm
rubbing your tummy.
Pieno, you know, basta. Everything basta. Is you animate and I enjoy it very much. I enjoy it very much. I really like this one when you're frustrated.
Oh yeah, I beg
it's
you.
Praying gesture.
Yeah, it's to pray, yes. It means I beg you. Yeah, it's true. It's like we have to put a emoji on what we're saying. It's sort of like you need something visual to augment and to, you know, give more meaning to what you're saying. I saw people doing that when they were thinking. So it's like you do that to kind of give more credit to your own thinking. And definitely you do that when you speak on the phone with somebody else. It's not going to be able to see you. Why you do that? It's just an instinct.
You gotta get the hands-free phone so you can you can speak properly.
Yeah, if you have a hands-free phone, that's what you do. Or, yeah. But it's true, and people use it even when they're thinking. I think that's the most funny thing that even my wife noticed when we were there. Somebody at the autogrill, we talked about the autogrill, was going around looking for salt. And, because they probably have salt in some kind of a dressing station somewhere. Where you go pick it up and share with other people. So she was basically doing two things, going around making the sign of pouring salt onto food, like a gesture of pouring salt, and then a gesture of question, which is, you don't see me, Nick, but it's like
this?
Yeah, like that, and the shaking of the hand back and forth in a small fist, the fingers back and forth to signify I wonder where it is, or like question mark. So she mm-hmm. was like doing the two things, and we totally knew what she was doing and what she was looking for. Mm-hmm. So it's very true. People cannot stop themselves from doing that. Interesting.
It's very helpful for foreigners.
Yeah, it helps. True. That's a good point. Yeah, there's no poker face there. You can totally tell what they're thinking. Yes. All right. Okay, we've done social interactions. We could probably talk for hours about this one, but I wanted to move on to the last couple of topics, which I think are just as interesting. So the first one is a controversial one. We're going to talk about politics now. Okay, So the stereotype is that Italian politicians are corrupt. We're going to get into trouble here, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We're not going to say if it's true or false because we like, you know, our freedom. But yes. But I have to say that there's some truth in it. Historically, there has been some truth. That's how I'm going to get out of this. To say, yeah, if you're familiar with the Operation Mani Pulite, which is the clean hands operation of the 90s, they essentially took down pretty much the majority of the politicians that were running at that time and that have been running really for 50 years up to that time, you probably know that there was a lot of corruption. So yes, I have to say historically true. Now, I don't know anymore. I hope not. Probably still hard to get rid of it completely. Mm-hmm. But another point is that people, you know, don't know exactly how to relate to this. They sort of accept it on one end. They think that that's normal. Again, it comes down to, you know, being the last person on the bus. If a politician is not taking advantage of his position and, you know, he's not working the system, somebody else will. So another politician will. So you might as well, you know, do it because he's not less smart than the other person. But again, personally, I think it's not true anymore, and people are becoming much more aware of the global impact that they're having on society when they do that. So I think that there's a lot of wonderful people that are not into it for that at all. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to say that, go on record with that. What is your thinking here?
Well, you know, this is one that I can't probably speak to as much as you have. You know, I didn't have a lifetime there. I'm just someone who's read about it and observed things. Mm-hmm. One thing that I definitely observed is that Italians are very pessimistic about their politics. They're, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, people are here too, for sure, especially now, but just at any mention of any politician, you know, here it's more like the side you don't like, they're all corrupt, but Italians really have that, mm-hmm. like, well, they all are. Although there's people like that here too. You know, any mention of like Berlusconi, all my students would definitely, oh, he's the worst, you know, he was terrible. But then you talk about Renzi, mm-hmm. oh, he's corrupt, you know, he's terrible. And at least I think for outsiders, you know, Renzi, who is now resigned, but mm-hmm. He seemed to be like a promising, like new generation, kind of more idealistic type of guy that, but I think that kind of cynicism, I mean, and who knows, maybe he was corrupt, who knows, but people are very cynical there that I think they don't want to, they've been burned so many times, they don't want to trust anyone.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Last time you mentioned this documentary, The Italian Americans, mm-hmm. that I since got DVDs for and I've been watching. It talks about it a little bit there, like a general distrust for the government and the police as the way to enforce the law. So this comes from the governments that Italians have been having before the Republic, and it carried into the Republic as well. So I think people are sort of used to that, and they in a way try to stay out of it. Mm-hmm. You know, this is very, very difficult and tough subject, and something that I hope will improve over time. People will have more trust and will get more involved as well in the political system. Right now you're it's a profession and full-time job for some people. That's mm-hmm. all people think, I think. Anyway, let's move on from that. It's just a difficult one to dissect. But you're right about pessimism, about Italy, about the conditions, about the economy. That's true. It's there and it's everywhere. Again, it's something that I hope will improve. In the same way, I hope that another thing will improve, which is that there is still a pretty vast divide between North and South in Italy. We talked about it before. It's very much, you know, if you go see the history of the two sides, the North and the South, you realize why, you know, they had completely different governments before the unification of Italy and very different economical conditions. So this divide, continues today. Yeah, and that's not a stereotype. Unfortunately, is the truth. So yeah. Anything you want to add to that, Nick?
Yeah, and like you said, it's something where we want to watch what we say. But I definitely met people in the North who kind of said the stereotypical things about people from the South, lazy, corrupt. And that kind of goes to what, from the history of it all, it seems like that the Southern Italian regimes were definitely more oppressive. Mm-hmm. And that's where you got that distrust. Mm-hmm. From even more so than the North. So then the people in Southern Italy have that mentality where they don't trust especially the state. And then, so they behave in certain ways, and then it's a race to the bottom because everyone feels like they have to behave in those ways or they will get screwed. And then I met people in the South who said, oh, the North, everyone is, running around all the time, like they're moving too fast, da, 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 da. So that will kind of be the reverse of it. But yeah, it's definitely real. It's definitely there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. Let's finish this episode on a lighter note because this is getting a little bit depressing. Okay. So the last, group of stereotypes is about general health and hygiene, especially personal hygiene, because the Italians are known for being very particular about their personal hygiene, and they have some habits about that. Like, you mentioned to me something about the fact that, Italians keep their shoes on at home.
Well, they like to wear, I guess, Crocs is what we call them here.
Yeah.
But they like to wear those, like, rubbery slipper things. With socks?
Oh, that must be new, because in my days, we kept shoes.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because we have tiles, so it's not comfortable to walk bare feet. Some would use some slippers, but a lot of people would just keep their shoes on. We have very comfortable shoes, to be honest. So maybe that was my experience. I would come home from school or work, and I would just keep my shoes on.
Okay, yeah, the family that I live with, everyone had those kind of rubbery slipper things. Uh-huh. And they would wear those around the house when they were kind of lounging around. But yeah, no carpet anywhere. Mm-hmm. I don't really know why that is.
Because it's dirty.
Is that what it is? It's easier to clean tile?
I mean, in the 70s, we had carpets. I was born in the 70s. And so my family had a carpet. I have pictures with me on the carpet, my brother. And then I started developing asthma. It wasn't related to the carpet, but they had to rip it up because, I was allergic to dust. And in general, yes, it is never possible to keep it clean. Mm-hmm. Italians would not consider that clean at all. If you cannot wash it with chlorine, then it's not clean. Italians are very particular about the hygiene of their floors.
Yeah.
And of everything else, really. They groom themselves. They care about, it goes back to bella figura, I think, a little bit. But I think to look healthy also means to look taken care of. To pay attention to that. So the men will trim their beards if they have beards, spend hours to get ready and and look fabulous before they can get out of the house. So definitely a lot of that. So I have to say, the stereotype is that Italians care about their hygiene and groom themselves a lot. I'll have to say it's true. Yeah.
And the other one actually that we had above, but kind of fits in, is the hair dryers, the blow dryers.
Oh, yes, we missed that.
Yeah, a lot of people told me, oh, you got to dry your hair because everyone's going to tell you're going to get sick. I lived with a doctor. Mm-hmm. She didn't really get too bent out of shape about that, but I also saw, we went to some of the kids, recreational basketball games, mm-hmm. and you'd have, middle school boys blow drying their hair after the game before they went outside. So yeah, definitely, it's definitely, but I learned the power of the blow dryer while I was over there. I could never really get my hair to stand upright until, Italian barbers taught me about the blow dryer. So
you brought it back and now you use it?
Yeah.
You blow dry your hair.
Yeah.
It's true. I remember my friends doing that. I never was too much into that, but certainly I would not get out of the house in winter, especially with wet hair, because I knew that that was something that would for sure get me sick. I remember even a teacher in middle school giving a poor girl a very, very, very hard time for showing up with wet hair and say, "Are you crazy? You're going to miss so much school now because you're going to get sick tomorrow and be in bed for 2 weeks." So no. So she would have dried her hair if she could have. So that's true. And that taps into a little bit the superstition, which is something that we didn't quite talk about. But Italians are quite superstitious about things about health. And they think they want to control that as much as possible with best practices, let's call them that way. So that is a stereotype, but it's also true.
Mm-hmm. And you know what? I mean, I always knew people that thought you were going to get sick going outside here too. So, you know.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of that everywhere.
True. Yeah, it's not so bad.
Yeah.
So, Nick, I think this was a good snapshot of a lot of these stereotypes. And actually, they're not really all that true. Maybe anymore. But it's certainly funny and interesting to talk about it and think about why they even exist. So that was very, very interesting. So Nick, it's been a pleasure talking with you again. Everybody listening, if you enjoy the podcast and you're listening on iTunes, please do me a favor, go there and subscribe. And at the same time, you can add a rating. Doesn't have to be a good rating, just any rating. It would help me build up an average because I don't have one. It's ridiculous. I know the reason is because it's so hard to do on iTunes, but if you can find a way to do it, please help me do that. I'll appreciate it. So again, thanks so much for listening, and till next time. Bye, Nick.
Bye, Paolo. Ciao.